You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. That's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Planet of the Apes. Written by Twilight Zone creator Rod Serling, The Planet of the Apes is a staple in the science fiction genre. But why has this conflict between apes and humans stayed in the public consciousness for nearly 60 years? Perhaps it's the endless storytelling possibilities it incurs, spawning several sequels and a successful prequel trilogy. Or perhaps it's something deeper, something that speaks to what it means to be human. If you're ready to tread the thin line between humanity's savageness and intellect, the animal within, and the image of God, then let's take a look at Planet of the Apes. Welcome to the Live a Meaningful Story podcast, where we analyze stories and films that help us make sense of life. We are four friends with backgrounds in storytelling, filmmaking, teaching, and narrative therapy. Join us on our quest towards telling and living our stories more meaningfully.
I'm Derek Hatch.
My name is Nick Nata.
Hello, hello, everybody. I'm Joseph Wilson.
I'm Jason Lin.
All right, so last week was Watership Down. We began our series on animals, and now we are moving from bunnies to apes. So we're going to start this episode with the original Planet of the Apes, and then next week's episode, we are going to look at the prequel trilogy that came out in the 2010s. So Francis Collins, who was the head of the Human Genome Project, found that there was a 96% similarity between apes and humans, leaving a 4% difference. I think this film is exploring that 4% difference and wrestling with, well, what is the relationship between our human nature and our animal nature? All right, so let's do the Letterboxd for Planet of the Apes, and then we will dive into this conversation. Keep in mind, it will be very spoiler heavy. All right, here we go. Somewhere in the universe, there must be something better than man. A U.S. spaceship lands on a desolate planet, stranding astronaut Taylor in a world dominated by apes, 2,000 years into the future, who use a primitive race of humans for experimentation and sport. Soon, Taylor finds himself among the hunted, his life in the hands of benevolent chimpanzee scientists. So, 1968 might be the most important year in science fiction film history. Not the best, but it might be the most important because there's two really significant things that happen in 1968. One, you get 2001 Space Odyssey, which is this massive cultural like moment that still to this day is considered to be one of the greatest films of all time. Then you have today's film, Planet of the Apes. Coincidentally, both these films have monkeys in them. So I don't know what that says about science fiction at this time. But both of those films proved that science fiction can move from books and television onto the big screen successfully. Not that it hadn't done before, but hardly any science fiction films had reached the levels that 2001 and Planet of the Apes did.
And can we say how great this movie still looks? Like, even
yes,
the, yeah, like the makeup, absolutely, the costumes. That's perfect. Like, I'm looking at that and I'm like, I wish movies were still like this because it feels real. It's a real environment.
There's a state park in Malibu that maybe you've been to it before. I know I haven't, but
you must have been there.
You must have been.
You must be everywhere in California.
but Fox owned that land at the time. And so that's where they shot Park.
Remember when Disney didn't own Fox?
The whole, even the rocks and the everything, that's Malibu.
I know the beach.
So probably they filmed it in like some like Arizona or something like
that. Never been to Utah though.
The interesting thing about 2001 and Planet of the Apes is that 2001 is a movie where humanity has been kind of sucked out of that world, right? Again, both those movies, actually, humanity has been sucked out in a way. And they're both wrestling with that question of what does it mean to be human, but they explore it differently. Now, Rod Serling, you know, from my favorite show of all time, The Twilight Zone, right? He was hired to write the script. This was actually adapted from a book. And there's a lot of changes they made
a French
from
book,
the book.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Called Monkey Planet.
Yes. And
that's way better.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's way better.
Way better. Monkey Planet.
They give it to the French this one time.
So Rod Serling, in 1 year, it took him over 30 drafts to get it out. That's basically a new draft of the movie every 2 weeks that he was doing for a year. It took him, he said it was one of the hardest things he ever tried to write. And because he had to try to adapt this book, but he had to do it within the limitations of their budget. So like in the book, the ape civilization has actually advanced like beyond really ours. Tech, yeah. So that one of the changes they had to make was making it a bit more scaled back, right? Mm-hmm. Like the apes hadn't achieved that level of advancement yet that we had.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, despite having Rod Serling, a well-known director, and Charlton Heston on board for the movie, they couldn't get this movie made for a long time. There was no studio that was willing to back it. They got laughed out of the building because they said, you're going to have humans like dressed up as monkeys running around. Like, this sounds ridiculous. But the saviors of science fiction, 20th Century Fox, said yes. And I say that because in our Star Wars episode, they're the only ones that greenlit that, Lucas's vision.
Yeah.
They're the only ones that greenlit Planet of the Apes. And there's an upcoming episode we're going to do later that's a third franchise that also was them that they greenlit. And Alien, they greenlit that too. So they're kind of the...
Oh.
Yeah, so they're... And yeah, so they're kind of like Disney. The ones who's willing to take a bet on the wild card.
They're the original A24.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Dang. But there's one condition. You have to do like a makeup test. Like you have to prove that this isn't going to be stupid looking.
Yeah.
So they did film, like they had like $5,000. They filmed a scene like on the Fox lot. And you can actually watch it online. You could watch the original screen test with the makeup and everything. And it was good enough to where they said, yeah, sure, we'll greenlit this, right? Yeah, and then they brought on Jerry Goldsmith to do the music, the score, and he's the one who did a lot of the music in The Twilight Zone. And Roger Ebert was not a fan of this movie, but I think he low-key gave it the biggest compliment in his review, where he said that the Planet of the Apes feels like an extended Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, it did.
And it really does, right?
Makes sense.
We are going to spoil it, so if you have not seen it, please, because this has, I think, one of the greatest twist endings ever in cinema. I would have loved to have seen this in the theater.
Experience in the first
right?
time, yeah.
So this is a story that really holds up a mirror to humanity. So let's kind of walk through it a bit, right?
Yeah.
Let's kind of talk through this.
I love the beginning scene when, what's the captain's name?
You mean the main character, Taylor?
Yeah. Phone book. What's his name?
Taylor.
Okay, Taylor. You do it. Don't play with
me. Oh, no, I was slipping on
that. Oh, okay. All right. Come on now, phone book. Go. We need you.
Phone book. Crazy.
But when he's talking to himself and he's looking out like through the hyperspace pretty much. Even that imagery was like really beautiful. I love the colors of it all. And
again, this is 68. This is before we've landed on the moon.
Yeah.
So we've got that like space race, you know, like that desire, like what's out there. That's
original Star Wars
hyperspace.
Yeah.
I like that. I honestly like that better than the Star Wars version.
Yeah. It's it's
colorful.
Cool in this.
It's swirling.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I didn't know Rod Serling made this. So it makes sense though. A lot of the movie, it's just heavy dialogue driven.
Mm.
And it's just extended scenes of dialogue with no music.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is a little different for today's sci-fi.
Absolutely.
The opposite.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this is very like intellectual dialogue the whole time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? Is it's this
like a
would
book.
This
it's
would
like
normally be like a B movie concept in a lot of ways, but I think because of Serling's script and his writing, I think that really elevates it to it where it is like the level of like a novel when you're reading it. It's very sophisticated.
Like that courtroom scene was just nothing but talking,
yes.
But I loved it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was really good. And it was like very thought-provoking.
It's almost like theater a little bit.
There's yeah.
Very much. Mm-hmm. That court scene especially is like theater.
Did you guys get that video I sent of the Simpsons Planet of the Apes musical?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love you, Dr. Zayas.
I read one line from The Simpsons where he's like, I hate every chimp from chimpanzee.
chimpanzee. I was like, that's crazy.
Awesome.
So when The Simpsons does that where they'll do musical parodies of well-known films, I think my favorite one might actually be The Streetcar Named Desire. That one's really funny too. Yeah, it's great. But yeah, so... That going back to that opening scene that you were mentioning, Joe, Taylor has that line of dialogue where he talks about this glorious paradox of mankind, you know, and it seems like he's running away. He's trying to find something better than man out there. He's kind of a little jaded with humanity, right? Yeah.
Isn't he just trying to find a woman?
No, not even. He is running away from humanity. He's not happy with what humanity has turned into.
But he has a scene where he's like, there's a lot of love making on Earth, but no love. And he's, I think he says he left because he was looking to be held or something like that.
Mm. Yeah.
Like he left because he was looking for comfort.
He's just looking for a doll.
Well, I'm sitting here thinking him and Hazel would be best friends. To be a cross animation movie.
Have a crossover.
Across the multiverse.
Because it's all the multiverse of animals.
Yeah. And just like Violet, they lose their only doe.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's all, yeah.
And when they arrive on the planet, they look at her and they're like, oh, she didn't make it.
But I think that's a main theme of the movie. I'm not sure if you're going to get to that later.
Yeah.
But at the end, he's like, I didn't know man could be monogamous.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, it's easy on this planet.
Yeah.
There's only one girl left.
Yeah, right, right.
But
yeah.
And then to the end has like a lot of symbolism that's also connected.
Which we'll
to
get
that.
To. Yeah, we'll get to that. But Taylor would fall under what's called the seeker archetype. So the seeker archetype is always trying to search for something better, right? But it's not just something better out there.
Yeah.
They're also trying to find that search because they're searching for it within as well, right? And I think that it's interesting because Taylor is ultimately searching for something better than humanity, but he's ultimately trying to see, to wonder if humanity can be better in some way. Because by him seeing something better, that could make him better, right? And when we get to the end of the film, we realize that he actually has this deep connection with humanity that tears him up emotionally inside once he realizes, right?
That's at the end.
The end, but we'll get there. You know, they get to the planet and you don't know what planet it is.
And he's kind of like a D-bag in the beginning. Where laughing at the guy and he's like, oh, what was he saying? Just like you're over here praying or you think that you can hold yourself together, but this is it, man. We're going to die here.
Yeah, he really accepts his fate, right?
Like, dang, man.
And he's psychoanalyzing the guy that's with him and just ragging on him.
Yeah. Yeah, those human characters, right? The just the tension there.
You're not like me. You're negative.
Yeah. But then, of course, we have the moment when the apes emerge.
And that's horrifying.
Yes.
I really love that scene.
People are all running around.
Yeah.
I was like...
Because it's not even like an ape roar that you hear. Like, what is that? That could be anything. And it's the apes on
the horses.
Like
the horses.
Yeah. Cool. That's like dope.
The shooting humans, catching them in necks and nets, and they're posing with them like we would with something we did. Like,
this movie, I think the reason why this one is my favorite out of all of them, besides the fact that, I mean, there's just the concept alone, I think, like, is just incredible. They had to create this from scratch.
Yeah.
But just like every time I watch this movie, I'm deeply unsettled. I'm deep, not in like a horror movie kind of way, but in this like,
reflection of humanity.
Well, and like if I was on this planet, I couldn't speak, but I knew there were, because that's the thing is he gets shot in the throat, right? Yeah. So he's injured. He can't speak. So that frustration that he must feel for the longest time, and it takes a while before he can talk again, right? But the way the apes treat him, the way they talk about him.
Yeah.
But not only is that horrible, but he's also seeing they're doing it because that's what humanity ultimately does. So it's like a double layer of horror that you're witnessing. And it is so unsettling to watch.
Even with the connecting to what you're talking about with the speaking, the first words that you hear the apes say, smile, when they're taking a picture.
Yes.
Like, next to the cattle. Like, that's like, ooh.
Smile.
Yeah. Like, because it's not like in the new movies, it's like, oh. A smile. It's like a normal guy saying smile. And it's like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. And then one of my favorite scenes, probably in any sci-fi film. So there's different views that people have of Taylor, right? There's Dr. Cornelius. And what's the girl's name again?
I don't remember. Actually,
phone book is playing around, man.
I watched way too many movies in the last
couple of days, to be honest, huh?
Yeah. So there's some apes that see that there's something different about Taylor and they want to study him like a science project, right?
Literally. But then Taylor's Charlton Heston.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there's Dr. Zaius, and Dr. Zaius is like, he's like the head of science and religion, right? Which I think alone, that's an interesting commentary there, right?
The chimpanzee lady's name is Zira.
Thank you, Zira, that have this interest in him. But then there's a scene when Taylor like breaks out, right? He still can't speak yet, but he's running and he's running through like the ape church service. Mm-hmm. He's running through the museum that has his friend that is like taxidermied. Like that scene, this is why it's like one of my favorite. It's so horrifying because he's literally like seeing like this weird twist of human culture, but it's turned against him, right? And then, you know, he's cornered. They've got him in the ropes and the tension, the music, everything is, because again, it's a very quiet movie for a lot. So when the music and when it's just absolutely a bonkers score, it sounds like everything's going off the rails. And then he finally gets his voice back and says that line.
Please let me go, guys.
I'm unplugging your mic.
Please let me go. That's funny.
Take your paws off me, you damn dirty ape.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty apes.
He says it so slowly, too.
Yeah. I love that moment, though. That horrifying moment when the apes realize he can talk.
It's like, oh. It's just like a reverse of, like, with the reboot.
Yeah, we'll get to that when we talk about Rise, right? Yeah. How it actually flips that scene in a different way.
Or even that, well, okay, we'll wait till we get to Rise.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Imagine you catch a lizard and it says that to you. You just sneak it.
That would be horrifying. Oh,
yeah. You'd probably just kill it.
Yeah. It's an abomination to the god.
Yeah, like, whoa, I didn't hear that. No, we're not doing this.
We're not doing this.
They'd be like the apes.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So maybe they're thinking like that the in the movie. Oh, why is that talking?
Bring a trial in for the lizard. What was interesting, though, that I thought? Because they stripped Charlton Heston down. He's naked in the middle of the court. I'm like, they really got to do this? But then I thought, well, our pets are naked.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
All animals are naked.
If the lizard was wearing pants.
That's what I'm saying. I'd be like, what is that lizard doing?
That's real. It's real. That's real. That's funny, but it's real.
Lizard wearing pants.
It's a madhouse. A madhouse.
Well, it is, because they literally lobotomize
the guy's
right?
side of
the side of his friend's head. That I'm just insane. Like, dang. Like, the extent they'll go to cover it up.
Yeah.
Because I bet they saw that he had intellect, right? That he had that.
Because he must have been speaking as well when he, like, recovered from getting, like, knocked in the head.
And he's like, yeah, sure, we'll go see your friend.
Yeah.
It's a madhouse.
They brain that dude quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That point there. When he's like naked, also they do the fire hose, right?
Yeah.
Clean up.
Again, time context, right? Yeah. 1960s, civil rights,
segregation and stuff like that with the holes.
Yeah. Yes, that image was burned into public consciousness.
Especially when he's in a cage. Taylor's in a cage as well, and they're just hosing him down.
Well, that's one of the things that Serling was attracted to with this script was he wanted to do a story about what would happen if those who are on top had to be subjugated to something else that would be deemed below them, right? In this case, the apes. I mean, there's a lot of people that will talk about race, like, right? Like, Planet of the Apes is like an allegory for race relations, right? It's not something I really feel qualified to talk about personally for me, but it is interesting that those images, like, there definitely is a deliberate consciousness there to do that, to kind of draw those lines there at certain moments.
Especially in the new ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's reverse, and now it's like outright, in your face imagery.
Totally,
and then you watch that downfall.
Yeah.
Now, when you get to the film and Taylor can start talking and the conversations that he's having with the different apes, right? And that it's a good period of the movie where it's just dialogue.
Wait, sorry.
They're trying to figure out what to do with him, yeah.
But we should talk about when he can't talk and he's writing the notes. And the one that's head over science and religion is
Dr. Zaius.
Yeah, he's covering it up the entire
time. Yeah, there's something going on.
Yeah, he's writing in the sand, he sees and he swipes it away with his feet. Like, throughout, you can tell that he already knows.
He knows something.
Yeah.
The paper airplane, too, is interesting because, like, a man of science, he would have been like, oh, wow.
Yeah, but he's just like, this is rubble. It. Yeah, this is rubbish.
And it's not like he wasn't interested or thought it was stupid. He knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just done. Nope.
Well, even the trial that he has when he can talk, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, silence, silence. Like, it's just...
What is scripture five? What is all that?
Yeah, uh-huh, they're quoting scripture.
He's like, I don't know your ape theology. Yeah. He has no higher thinking. It's like, dang, like, will we do that to a lizard?
Yes. Think about it.
Yeah.
Like, shut up.
What is Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 26?
Do you know it say God is man?
You created God's...
Yeah.
Yeah. Apes are created in the image of...
Man.
Right? So it's like, it's interesting because you see that the best and the worst things about humanity, they make it into this ape civilization here.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what's frustrating with Taylor. But then he also, at the same time, figures out, well, what does he need to lean on in certain moments? Because he tries for the longest time to reason intellectually, to try to prove that, right? But then at the day, he's like, I need to just get a gun. get my dough, get my woman,
and just get on a horse.
Get on a horse. Yeah. So it's interesting because he has to resort to the more like primitive, dare I say it, almost ape-like tendencies of humanity to get what he wants, right?
Not even what he wants, just freedom.
Just freedom, which is interesting because he's trying to he's trying to be the best of humanity. And he's like, screw it. I'm just going to.
Yeah.
I need a gun.
But I feel like that you can
50 rounds of ammunition. Food, water, that's it.
But yeah. Like, you can even tie that to the Civil War like times because it's like we are trying to talk to you intellectually, but you are not listening, and now we have to revolt in a sense.
Yeah.
Go to that basic instinct of having to rebel in a destructive way because the way you are trying to do it in a reasonable way is not working.
Yeah. Yeah. So then there's this kind of mission that they go on to try to prove in some, there's a cave and there's something in there that can prove that humanity was once what it was, right? Yeah. And then that's when, you know, when they get there, they find the doll and Dr. Zaius isn't impressed, but then it's a talking doll.
Mm-hmm. And a talking human doll.
Talking human doll, that's right.
It's a Barbie doll.
And then that's
the Barbie
when
doll saved.
Humans would do that.
Yeah.
Talking lizards or Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, that's true. Things. Like we have Godzilla and King Kong kind of talking to each other, you know?
Right. Well, but we learned that Dr. Zaius is aware of something.
Talking to the lizard about Godzilla and going, see, you're wrong. This is just a human toy. To get poor lizard. Wouldn't stand a chance in today's media.
Not today's media.
No.
Well, you know, the Geico, you know, gecko.
Oh, yeah, that. He's real. He's actually real. We were joking, but he's real.
Yeah, see, by civilization? No, that doesn't prove anything.
Just stick you in a commercial. This is all genuine commentary, guys. Everybody who's listening, this is genuine.
Yeah, this is because a lizard helps because it's unquestionably under us. It's just this little thing on a table and we're listening to, like, shut up. Why are you wearing pants, lizard?
You literally skirted out of your house.
And yet it sells us insurance.
Yeah.
It sells us insurance.
It's kind of insane.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like we're all Charlton Heston at the end. You ruined it.
Yeah.
You all. We're in the middle of it. We're screaming.
Uh-huh.
You blew it up. You blew it all up.
Yeah. So you get to the end and you learn that Dr. Zaius actually has known all along of what humanity was. And so he's knows what humanity is capable of. And there's that line like, this, you know, it was once a paradise, but your breed made a desert out of it.
He lays into the
to
the humans at the end. He's just like, I know what you guys are capable of, and that's why I cannot allow you to, one, reproduce, and two, like, allow the others to have a higher thinking as well.
Yeah, it makes him a compelling antagonist, right?
Yeah,
because you kind of fully understand, like, why he's trying to.
That's why he crushed the plane, because it's like, oh, we can't have this.
It almost makes me wonder that even though there's like a budget limitation that they can't show this futuristic, I wonder if in the film, like if I read the original screenplay, I'd be curious if this was in there, Like, is Dr. Zaius is he deliberately holding back Apekind from moving too far forward?
So that they don't get self-destructive.
Like, if he is trying to keep them stuck at a certain level, because you know, there's that science versus religion debate, right? Yeah. And obviously, this is raging in the 60s, and you had the Scopes trials that was, like, I think half a century earlier or something like that, where you are having the debate of, like, what's the role of religion? What's the role of science and evolution,
and
right?
He literally has his hands over both.
Yeah. Well, he's trying to control it, right? He's trying to control the narrative. And I think it's perhaps because, and I think this is where some of that commentary is really coming in here, because there is what's called the myth of progress. So a lot of people in the Enlightenment age were saying that in Enlightenment, I'm talking like 1700s and 1800s, right? That were basically saying, like, humanity is getting better. Things are progressively getting better. And there's people who still believe this, that things are ultimately getting better and better and better. And while it's true in, like, technology is getting better so that we can live lives more comfortably, that we can live longer, we can have access to food easier, right? There is a sense of technological progress, but is human nature itself actually getting better, right?
End up on the Anthem.
And it's interesting because when you get to the 20th century, you get two world wars, you get the Holocaust, you get the nuclear bomb, you get all these things that kind of destroy in a lot of people's minds the notion of progress. Like, is humanity actually getting better, or is our just technology getting better, our knowledge and intellect getting better, but ultimately we're stuck in something, right? We're stuck in something primitive. And I think that's what the movie is playing around with, that idea. Because I wonder if, again, if Dr. Zaius is holding back Apekind from getting into the, quote, 20th century, like, so to speak, airplanes, the bombs, all these different things. Because, of course, we learn that when Taylor's going to go up the shore, Dr. Zaius says, you may not like what you find. And he goes and he sees, of course, that image of the Statue of Liberty in the sand, right? Which that image is really potent in itself, because literally something that is meant to be an embodiment of hope and liberty and freedom, right? All these things, it's literally being buried in the sand. It's being eroded over time because, you know, as he says, like, you blew it all up.
Yeah.
And so there reaches a point where, despite humans' technological progress, did human nature actually change? Or did we resort to being beasts, savages, apes, to being these things that ultimately destroyed us? And in the height of, like, the Cold War, this must have really hit people, this realization here.
I think it would be just terrifying for them. I mean, even the idea now, like, nukes haven't gone away.
No.
Like, they've just increased over time.
Are we even closer now in 2024 than we were in 1968?
Yeah, now we have literally the capability to destroy the entire planet multiple times over.
Yeah.
I really think Dr. Zaius was subjugating the truth for the sake of the future and for the sake of the whole, because at the end, he's like, all right, get some explosives in there. We're going to blow up the cave. What was the young one? The young chimp?
Lucius,
name?
I think.
Lucius.
Something like that. But he says, I take no pleasure. What I'm about to do, I take no pleasure in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, what about the future? What about this? And he goes, be careful. I just might have saved it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really gets harder to argue with him because, yes, there's a deception, there's a lying, but he's seen what comes down the road. And even though it's not, it truly isn't in his control, because, you know, something might happen. They might truly learn, the ape civilization might learn the truth and still go forward despite his best attempts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he is trying to keep them stuck from what the humans have done and keep history from being repeated.
Yeah.
But he can only, you know, he can only do it for so long.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just staving off inevitable, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the first line that Taylor utters when he gets his voice back, it's like a damnation of the apes. Mm-hmm. But his last words in the film is that damnation of humanity.
Yeah.
Because once he realizes it's Earth, he recognizes that his question in the beginning has been answered for him. Is there anything better out there than human? And the answer is no.
Yeah.
And where does that leave you as the audience, right? Where does that leave us when we walk out of there? Is, wow, so if this is it, right? If we're if it's us and even the apes, like, you know, the apes aren't better than us, right?
They got their culture from humans.
Yeah.
They got everything from us. So if we are left unto ourselves, if we are all we have in the universe, what do we do with that? And I think that's what the movie is trying to leave us, like a good Twilight Zone episode. Mm-hmm. It's trying to leave us something really meaty to chew on there. And thinking about, like, well, what does progress and, because evolution is important in this film as well. Like, what is the notion of evolving? And it's ironic because there's the belief that, you know, humans evolved from chimps, right? Evolved from the apes. And now the apes have evolved from humans. But what is the evolution? Like, what is it ultimately evolving towards?
It's just, it seems like just a cycle of self-destruction, if anything. Yeah.
And the more I've been thinking about it, I just think this story is really relevant for us today. This is a story I think we really need right now. And the question that's facing us is humanity going to rise above this moment? And when Taylor shouts out, you know, you blew it all up. We gave in to the brutality of nature, of our own nature, and we didn't learn how to rise above it. And I think that until we do, until we embrace the imago Deo, the image of God within ourselves and within one another, it could lead to disaster, not to sound nihilistic, but in left in just our nature, you know, I think this is what Planet of the Apes is trying to warn us from, that if we're just left to that and we no longer try to aspire to something higher and greater than that, then I think we're doomed. And I think that's what, spoiler alert, when we get to the prequel series next week, I think that's why humanity fails and that's why the apes ultimately thrive, is because within Caesar, there was someone who was willing to embrace the path towards that higher calling. I just think this movie, it's so good. And I know we talked about the brutality of nature confronting that last time, but I think the way that we really confront that is by recognizing that progress is possible. It is possible for us as people to change, even if it's one person at a time. And so that question, is humanity making progress? It's a loaded question, and it's not one that we can fully answer here on this podcast. But I do think it starts by asking, how can I grow? How can I change? How can I make progress? And how can I be the best version of myself I can be? And I think that all starts with figuring out what kind of story we want for our lives. Surprise, surprise. So in that question, is humanity progressing? Is humanity getting better? Is it evolving towards something good? I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I believe humanity is at a point where it would need to shift. I feel like there's just a lot of tension now.
Mm-hmm.
And not just tension with people, but even in, I would even say in just the world in general.
Yeah.
Like all of these natural disasters and things like that, that have just been happening recently. It's,
there's
a buildup to something and something's going to be popping off soon, I feel like.
Well, a lot of people feel that there's something like, almost like apocalyptic in the air, right?
Mm.
Not necessarily that the world is coming to an end in and of itself, but that some big changes are coming. Right. And they're going to have to if we're going to figure out how to live in this world, you know, even longer. So it's interesting because there's that question of, can human nature change? Like, is it possible for humans to change course? Is that right? And I think this movie says no. I actually think the whole series kind of is saying no, but I do think the prequels will offer a piece of the puzzle that this movie doesn't. And I think when we get there next episode and talk about that, we'll see that there is a little bit more hopefulness about human nature, right? But just kind of sitting in this, like, Nick, Jason, any thoughts on this idea of progress or human nature being able to change?
I've always kind of been of the mind of, you know, brand new ways to do the same exact thing we've always done, just the nothing new under the sun. Like, things will change, the way we do things will change, the things we talk about will change, because I'm trying to explain this movie that to my parents. I'm trying to explain Watership Down to my parents, and my mom just goes, ah, that's a weird movie you're watching.
She's got discernment.
Yeah. So these movies are just weird to her. There's no point there's no understanding for some of them. For some, she's like, oh, cool. But some of these are different ways of thinking than the generation before, whether they've had it and then, you know, toss it to the side, or just that, what, you know, we're asking questions for things that they have not asked questions or, you know, didn't bother with the answer. But, you know, the overall difference of, I guess, values and good, I don't think it's going to change that much. I know here in the West, people seem to be very, very individualistic, and that's only getting further towards that. But I think things shift, and once something goes way too far to one extreme, it starts to go towards the other to correct itself, but it just goes in waves.
That's why I'm cynical about AI, because even though, like, technology will get better and we'll be able to do better things with it, but what's at the heart of that, right? What's at the heart of that usage? If we have developed, you know, a bomb that is capable of wiping out, you know, a civilization just like that, who knows what human heart is going to do with the technology given the opportunity, right? And I think that's kind of the cautionary tale that we find ourselves in as people. And that's what good science fiction does, right? By definition, science fiction helps us explore these questions of what is our relationship with our own nature as humans. Any thoughts, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to answer this without like a typical religious terminology.
Yeah.
But I think aside from like death and then resurrection, like, we can't change. Like, I'm absolutely powerless. But that has come over time through that. And it's interesting, in the end of Planet of the Apes, there is a death. Like, humanity has died, but there's no resurrection. So Charlton Heston,
unless it's him and Nova, right?
Like, but he can't see that. It's just he's stuck in this despair.
Yeah.
Because there's no resurrection. So it's really just like the seeking, this like futile seeking in Planet of the Apes and in a lot of science fiction.
Yeah, that's good.
But as a whole society, I mean, the story goes that this is just going to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this progression can come individually in certain, you know, Christian communities, and it can, I guess, stretch out as much as it can. But as a whole, the earth is going to, you know, come to an end in the story.
Yeah.
So, or it's going to get transformed, rather.
Yeah. What are we progressing, quote unquote,
to,
right? To.
Yeah.
Just to the end.
The progression is progression to a death.
If anything, resurrection. It's an image of progression then, because we're not really progressing. It's just a false progression.
It seems like it's like a regression, but it's actually a progression, which is, I think, tied into Planet of the Apes somehow. Like, it's in there somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because like, the progression is going towards death and resurrecting.
Yeah.
Right.
But now I'm getting into like very religious.
Well, it's interesting because like the name Nova, there is now a new man and new woman on that planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's a man who can speak, who like really existed in the beginning of this, like thousands of years before, and has now come back into the new future with a new woman, and now something else is coming from that.
Right.
And I think the movie plays its cards when it ends in despair because they can't see that new man and new woman resurrection.
Right. I want to end with this quote from the Jewish philosopher. His name was Philo. And he wrote this line, and I think this sums up, like, going back to the paradox that Taylor speaks of at the beginning of the film, right? This paradox of who humanity is. This quote here from Philo says, "In the first, Genesis 1, God created the divine image as an idea or type or seal, an object of thought only, neither male nor female, but nature incorruptible. Thus, the souls of human beings have been made after the image of the archetype, the word, the logos of the first cause. In Genesis 2, on the other hand, God formed human beings from the clay of the earth and breathed life into them. Thus, people are a mix of created clay and eternal soul." And I think that's the paradox that we find ourselves in. Yeah. Any final thoughts?
8 out of 10.
I would give this a 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10 for me.
I think I'm closer to 8. I like it. It's very, very good. Mm. But it's more of like it's so dialogue heavy.
Yeah.
But I love the dialogue heavy.
Like, they're refuting the truth in the courtroom. Just like, oh, but what about, no.
Yeah.
It's literally like asking a lizard, what is Disney about?
It always comes back to the lizard.
But like,
I'm not sure if there's enough like real tension and conflict, or there is in the story,
yeah,
but as it is displayed in the movie, I'm not sure it gets high enough.
Mm. Really?
Yeah. It's, well, I'm thinking of Dawn, like Koba and Caesar,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
the tension is like so high. Mm-hmm. It's in war, it's in all of them, but this one's like, the tone is, it's like, it's lower. It's a little bit more, yeah, cerebral. Like they're playing this game intellectually, but yeah, it never reaches,
it's more like
a
chess,
boiling. Yeah,
yeah,
never, and it,
yeah,
never really hits that until the end.
Yeah,
until, mm-hmm, the very, very end.
Well, I guess the stakes are not necessarily as high because it's the life of one man, mm-hmm, being snuffed out, and then that planet just goes the way it is. Like things could change in one way or they could in another, but there's only, it's all around one character.
Yeah,
it's like an even anti like Watership Down in the sense of like having that legacy, because Even though Taylor survived, there's no like, oh, there's this tale of this man Taylor and he came and he saved the humans from the chimps. Nope. Still a race from history and we're moving,
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
We don't know. We're cut off at that point.
That's true.
Right. Could be something else.
Yeah.
We don't, it just ends right there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Revelation.
But,
well,
classic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I don't have a rating, but it'll probably be on my letterbox.
Good job, Jason.
Letterbox.
Yeah,
I was thinking about ratings, and I was wondering if it would be better to be like, this is a movie you have to see, strongly recommend. I recommend.
Yeah.
You can miss it if you want.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
My best.
Like that. Or do not watch
yeah,
it.
Just do not. Please don't watch
don't
it.
Wait. Run away.
This is like a, this is foundational for
your life.
Like, yeah, like this is a spiritual,
yeah,
experience. Like you need to see this. And then, no, this is like strongly recommended. So we could talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is like, go see it. And this is like, whatever.
I think that's, yeah, why I like the 1 to 5 scale, because it helps like narrow it down. But really, the 1 through 10 and 1 through 5 are actually the same.
Yeah, they are.
3.5 is 7.
When you put a number on it,
right,
it feels different.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel significant. No, I like Nick's idea.
Put a number on it.
Well, how many levels did you have just now?
Like 4, 6.
5. Mm-hmm. Or, well, same thing.
then maybe I can look at it that way then.
Yeah. It's just you just put a digit to each,
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
All right.
So
that might have solved it.
So stories like Planet of the Apes are vehicles for ideas, right? And stories as a whole are vehicles for ideas. They help us to reconnect with our humanity in some way. I actually do quite a bit of workshops on this. I do workshops about analyzing stories, about the hero's journey. Different workshops on archetypes, trying to understand how stories connect with us on a really deep, fundamental human level. And if that's something that you're interested in, then go ahead and check out the workshop page at allthingsnarrative.com, here in the show notes as well. And if there's a workshop that really speaks to you, that really is interesting to you, even if you're not in the South Florida area, we can still do it virtually as well. I'd love to be able to bring this to your group and be able to facilitate these conversations about stories and their meanings in our lives. If that sounds interesting to you, check that out, allthingsnarrative.com. Send me an email, fill out a workshop inquiry form, do a consultation, and let's connect. And join us next week as we continue our journey through the Planet of the Apes as we explore the 2010s prequel trilogy. Thank you for listening to the Live a Meaningful Story podcast, produced by All Things Narrative. If you'd like to learn more about our coaching, workshops, events, please check out allthingsnarrative.com. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at All Things Narrative. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing and leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and tune in next time as we continue exploring the stories we love and the stories we live. Take care.